Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Happy Friday, happy Memorial Day weekend. I hope everyone is off somewhere or about to go somewhere and enjoy this great holiday weekend as we kick off the summer. And welcome here to another edition of Husker Online Headlines. Sean Callahan, Steve Sipple working here on this holiday Friday as we bring you the headlines of the week around Husker Nation. And we got a great show on tap, and I want to start, Sip.
Yes.
Right away. Headline number one, we are less than a week away from Nebraska's remaining newcomers arriving on campus. They'll move in to on campus, or a lot of them will May 31st. So who know better to bring in and talk about the transition from high school to now Nebraska than one of the highest ranked recruits here in the Husker 2023 recruiting class, wide receiver Malachi Coleman, joining us here on Husker Online Headlines. Malachi, first of all, thank you and congratulations. I saw you had your graduation party, the ceremony. I'm sure it's been a fun week for you as you kind of put a close on your time at Lincoln East.
Yeah, it was crazy, you know, but I had to finish out high school strong, stay on top of grades, made honor roll, and just looking forward to flipping into the next chapter.
What did you really gain? I mean, when you think about just the last 2 years of playing football and the development you've had, talk about how much you've improved and gotten better as you now get ready to make this step at Nebraska.
I mean, honestly, learning receiver has kind of been my biggest challenge. I was more seen as like a defensive end type person coming into like high school type stuff, because up until then I mainly played safety and then moved down to the line. But just developing and learning every single day, absorbing as much information I can, especially like going to the All-American game, learning from them and the Polynesian Bowl. Just those 2 weeks alone, like I learned so much more than I learned in all high school combined, because I'm like, I'm going against the best. And well, when you get challenged, you got to step up. And that's kind of what I did. It's like, if you're going to step up, I'm going to step up, because I'm competitive in that way. Like, I'm not going to lose. I don't care what it is.
So right now, Malachi, you are in the process of catching 20,000 passes before the start of preseason camp, which would be August 1st. How does that process go? I mean, what are you trying to get done on a daily basis in that situation?
So Coach McGuire said to the receivers, he's not going to take you to camp if you do not have 10,000 catches. So I'm not the person that's going to settle for average. I'm going to double it. And at this point, 714 per day for about 2 weeks will get me a 10,000, and then I do that for two more weeks, that's 20,000. So I'm probably going to go over 20,000, but I want to set the standard and let these guys know that work ethic's never going to be my problem. Like, I'm going to outwork you.
Period. Okay.
Malachi, you had the injury during track season early in March that took you out. I mean, how hard was that to go through mentally? Because I know that was one of the big reasons why you came back for the second semester, was you wanted to make a run at that 100-meter and 200-meter and even the relay team with Lincoln East, because you had some outstanding runners on that team with you. How tough was the spring for you, and how did you kind of turn the page on that and stay mentally motivated, not being able to be out there on the track?
It was probably one of the hardest things I've done, was having to shut down track. But I sat down, I had a conversation with coaches, and I said, I'm turning my attention to you. I'm locking in on you. Like, football is what I want to do. It's what I want to be the best at. So from there, it was just getting me back healthy. I've been healthy for about a month and a half now, about a month and a half, and been doing workouts and stuff. And it's just stacking to the point where I'm going to be coming into the fall where I'm going to be one of the people competing for a spot. But having that conversation and having to go to every meet and watch my teammates, and yeah, it sucked. I hate watching with a passion, because I'm competitive. I want to be out on the field. I want to be out on the track. I always want to be competing. So watching Jack and Jalen, all of them go out there and let on these times, I'm like, you know what, I should be out there killing it. It was a hard thing to do.
Malachi, you watched all 15 practices, which is remarkable to me. You didn't have class start till 10:40 a.m. at Lincoln East this spring. What are some of the impressions that you took away from those 15 practices? What sort of things were you looking for, and how beneficial was that?
I wanted to see how the coaches operate. I wanted to see how they teach, and I wanted to see how they coach. Each of those things are different to me. I want to see, for operating, I want to see how they structure practices, how detailed they are with everything, how they teach, I want to see how technical they get, with details to each route, with the details to each blocking assignment, and how they coach, is how they approach things when they're not trying to teach. And once I get that, I can get a feel, and I realize that mentally is where I'm going to have to be ahead of everybody if I want to be able to get time on the field. That's going to be the biggest jump, because if you ain't there mentally, you ain't fast mentally, then you aren't going to be on the field, period.
Malachi, speak on Garrett McGuire,
yes.
Your new wide receivers coach, because you've now been able to watch him, be around him, talk to him a lot more as you make this transition. What are your first impressions of your new position coach?
He is the most detailed person I've ever met. He goes through every single pass play, and he details every single person's route. He gives you notes. He tells you what you could do better, what you did good. He's an amazing person. He shows up when I need him. I can call him up anytime. He's going to be there for me. I can ask him any question. Like, he's just all around the person that you can need him to be, and you don't get that very many places. So to have him here, I'm very, very blessed to have him.
What are you thinking going into your freshman year as far as playing time? I mean, what is your approach mentally on that part?
Nothing's going to be handed to you. So if I work hard and I work them, then I'm going to have the spot. And if I'm not, then simply it's not. You got to be good enough. And I ain't no favorites in this game. It's just going to be if you're good enough or not.
What you've had a chance to watch Jeff Sims,
yeah.
Nebraska's quarterback. You've watched all Nebraska's quarterbacks, obviously, the last 2 years. What do you think of Jeff Sims after getting to see him all spring?
I don't think we've had a physical freak like that at quarterback in a long time. Seeing him back there, he's kind of special. He's a good dude. He's funny. He's smart. I love him. I love talking with him. I'm excited to have him.
You said Sims is a mentor. I saw another article where you said Jeff Sims is a mentor and Billy Kemp fits that category. Why those two?
Yeah, those two specifically, especially with meetings and stuff. Obviously, it was a lot to take in coming from high school to college ball. They helped me chop it up and to pieces and hustle some learn. Casey Thompson did that with me too, Marcus Washington. But everybody is kind of this. They look at me, but they know I'm a freshman, all that, but they have high expectations for me. And I like that. I don't want to let them down. So, you know, if I got to get the playbook down, I'm going to get the playbook down. If I got to get this workout, I'm going to get this workout. Just whatever I need. I can call them up with questions, and they're going to help me through it.
Yeah, you.
Malachi, as we wrap it up with you, what is the schedule? So when do you start classes? When do you move? What's next for the newcomers that are joining the program here this next week?
Yeah, so I'm moving Sunday at 3, and then I start classes on Tuesday.
No time off. You go right to school.
Hey, I'm okay with that, though. It's part of college life, being an athlete.
Well, Malachi, we all really enjoyed watching your career at Lincoln East and everything you've done, and now looking forward to seeing you play here at Nebraska. And thank you so much for your time, and congratulations on your high school graduation at Lincoln East.
Thank you.
All right. That was Malachi Coleman.
Thank you, Malachi.
Joining us here on Husker Online Headlines. Hi, it's Sean Callahan with Husker Online. We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So US Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for 5. That's right. A company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones and see what we find. Learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus. Let's move on now. Headline number 2, the Elite 11. And we haven't talked about this a lot for Nebraska because they haven't had an Elite 11 quarterback in a number of years. I want to say maybe Johnny Stanton might have been the last one they've had.
Or was it it was O'Brien?
Patrick O'Brien.
Patrick O'Brien, 2015.
In
2015.
Anyway, Nebraska's new quarterback commit, Daniel Kalen, was named to the Elite 11 finals this week that will take place later this month in Los Angeles. And who better to join us and break that down more than Brian Stump with Student Sports in the Elite 11, a longtime friend. I've known Brian for now, it's hard to believe, Brian, 20 years. And we appreciate you joining us here on Husker Online Headlines, and looking forward to talking about the Elite 11.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Happy to join. And it's the time of year where we get really popular, and signing day for I think a lot of recruiting analysts, you know, is the push point. And you get these opportunities to come on and talk about kids. And for us, it's really, you know, this time of year as we wrap the regional tour and we're heading into the Elite 11 finals. And you can add one more, because Jeff Sims, if you want to count him in the Nebraska Elite 11 tally, he was an Elite 11 finalist coming out of high school. Obviously he didn't sign with Nebraska out of high school, but he was in that class with CJ Stroud and Bryce Young and Anthony Richardson back in 2019.
Let's start right there, Brian. What impressions did Sims leave on you? Well, if you were telling someone about Jeff Sims, what would you say?
He was a sponge. He had a lot of athletic tools. I think the closest comparison for him in that class, honestly, was Anthony Richardson. They were both really twitchy, springy, athletic. Didn't have a lot of, you know, quarterback experience as it relates to going to a ton of events. And, you know, Jeff had a private coach that he started working with there in his high school career, but not a ton of quarterback reps. Wasn't all over the 7-on-7 tournament, but just to, you know, talk about a ball of clay that a coach wants to mold. You know, he has all the athletic tools, and he's also super coachable. So I think hopefully the opportunity for him to get in there with the staff that Coach Rule's put together and, you know, really be able to capitalize on all those tools he has, because he wants to learn and he wants to be great. And that's the impression we got from him in high school. You know, wasn't quite as polished yet as some of the other guys like the Bryce Youngs in that class and CJ Strouds and guys like that, but had all the tools and was willing to work and willing to learn. So, you know, you're around guys like that. They have super high ceilings, and it's going to be exciting to watch and see what they can do with him this year out there in Lincoln.
Brian, speak more on the history of the Elite 11. Like I mentioned, it's been a while since Nebraska fans have had a reason to tune in to the event, and it's changed a little bit. I remember originally it was 11 quarterbacks plus a wild card guy way back, and the events evolved. It's changed a little bit. Give us kind of an idea of the history of the event and how it's all set up now.
Yeah, sure. This is a big year for us. It's the 25th year of the Elite 11. So it was founded in 1999. And yeah, back then it was, hey, let's bring the top 11 quarterbacks out for a couple of days in Southern California and really give more coaching and instruction to the most difficult position to play in all of team sports. So it's evolved a little bit from then, but that's still the core. There's cool media around it now, and it's become a pretty big deal, which is great, and we're humbled by. So we want to give more guys the opportunity. So we go out and do regionals each year and canvas the country and work out. We probably worked out a little over 500 quarterbacks this year at 8 regional events. And then we select now our top 20 to come out for 3 days in Southern California and work. And we'll name an Elite 11, you know, at the end of that. But really, all these guys are super talented, and we're big fans of, that'll get selected for the finals this year. And so there's a little ceremony with naming an 11 and an MVP and things like that. But really the goal is to lean in and pass on as much as we can. And in the time we have those quarterbacks with the great coaching staff and some college counselors and things like that. And, you know, truly try to give those guys the best chance that they can to prepare and hopefully be successful at the next levels.
Why? I mean, we have you here, Brian Stump. This is a great opportunity to ask you, why Daniel Kalen? Why did he make the list of finalists?
Yeah, I think when you go back and you look at his tape from the fall, he's got an ability and a feel in the pocket. He's not a take off and run athlete, even, you know, as much as Zane Flores, who we also had, who was a Nebraska high school quarterback last year, the first, you know, quarterback from Nebraska. You know, Zane maybe profiles as a little more of an athlete and a dual threat kind of guy, but Daniel from the pocket is really, I think, truly one of the top pocket passers in the nation this year, and his film showed that. Mm-hmm. He's got a great feel in the pocket. He's not a statue. He can move around and make those subtle moves, but he can also deliver the ball, you know, really anywhere on the field. You know, great arm, strong arm, also accurate. So we're excited about his upside as a as a passer at the next level, think he's one of the top in the class when, you know, it just comes to being able to distribute the ball and find open receivers and put it on the receivers. And he showed that at the regional we had, that was back in Ohio in late April, I believe. the dates blend together a little when we've been on the road for 6 weeks in a row, wrapping up the regional tour. But yeah, I think he's a guy to be excited about, and he's only going to get better as he gets into college, you know, weight room and strength and conditioning program, and, you know, really grows into his man muscle, so to speak, in the next couple of years here.
Brian, you mentioned two quarterbacks from the state of Nebraska making the Elite 11 finals here 2 years in a row. I mean, how far has the development come in places like Nebraska? Because, you know, we've known each other a long time, and I don't recall ever there really being Nebraska quarterbacks on the radar early when we first knew each other. There's kids like Nathan Enderle who was drafted by the Bears, but developmentally they were not ready to be at a showcase event like what you guys put on every year. I mean, have you seen that in a lot of places? And I mean, for kids now in Nebraska to have some of the same development skills as what, you know, quarterbacks in California and Florida and Texas are getting, is that kind of the norm now, what you're seeing?
Yeah, I think over the course of the last 5 or 10 years, there's maybe been a little more of expansion or proliferation of the offseason opportunities for kids that are devoted to football, you know, whether that's opportunities to play 7-on-7. That's not just a thing in California and in Florida anymore. You know, there's traveling 7-on-7 teams from everywhere. And you also look at it from the quarterback personal trainer standpoint. You know, there are guys now in Nebraska and in Kansas and in Missouri that are, you know, offering those, you know, same kind of opportunities for quarterbacks and their families, because mom and dad have to play a part in that and helping them get to and from events like that and things like that. But quarterbacks that are motivated to learn more about the game and work more on their craft and things like that in the off season. So yeah, I think you know, the internet is also, and social media has also brought us closer together, right? So there's opportunities and access to, you know, more knowledgeable people and even remote learning sessions and things like that through social media now too. But yeah, I think as it relates to for athletes that are motivated and driven to be, you know, the best they can be, you're not limited by geography anymore. And that's a great thing for the sport. And it's a great thing for kids that, yeah, you're spot on. So I'm like 10, 15 years ago, they might've been too far off the grid to, you know, to get out to Southern California, which for a long time was kind of the spot for all the private quarterback coaching and things like that. And, you know, now kids just have so much, you know, better access, and there's so much information out there for kids that are motivated to increase their skill level and work in the off season.
Joined by Brian Stumpf. He is, his official title, Sean, is Director of Operations for Student Sports, which is the company that founded Elite 11. How do you, Brian, I was reading some stuff, and you do work with these kids on off the field type things, these quarterbacks. What kind of things are you emphasizing when you talk about off field elements for that position?
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of ways you can go. There's a number of places we have gone in the past. One of the things that we're most passionate about is helping these young men embrace the power of their influence, so to speak. So whether they like it or not, they play a position that you know commands respect for a lot of people in their, whether it's their high school, their community. We do this example every year with the players and their parents, and we ask the parents to recall who the quarterback was of their high school when they were in high school, and 95% of them, even the moms, know who the quarterback was. And then, okay, who was the mayor when you were in high school of your town? And they can't pull that, right? So these kids really are just coming into the realization of the ability that they have to make the world a better place, and it's a gift and it's a curse, and we just want to try to, you know, open their minds a little bit to the opportunities they have to change other people's lives, really with simple gestures and, you know, a little bit of their time. They can really help refocus things that, you know, can get better in their communities, whether it's their locker room at school, their hallways at the high school. They have the power to open people's minds to, you know, things that can be better in their communities. And so, that's one of the big things we really like to lean on. And then, we work with a children's cancer group, called NIGU, and a young man named Super Kate out here who's been an inspiration to so many of our quarterbacks over the years. And, you know, it's a life-changing experience for these children that are going through tough circumstances to meet these quarterbacks and you know, meet some of their idols and guys that are going to go on to play college and pro football. But But for our quarterbacks, they draw inspiration from just how courageous these young kids are going through their fight against cancer. And so it's really a mutually beneficial relationship when we're able to connect them with these courageous kids, and they can draw inspiration from both sides. And so, you know, things like that are really important to us. And we get to spend, you know, a good 60 to 65 hours with these guys, and it can't just be football. Otherwise I think we'd be you know, disingenuous in trying to change their lives for the better in all aspects of what they're doing.
Brian, you have a star-studded list of alumni that have been in your event. Out of curiosity, you know the data, how many Heisman Trophy winners, first round draft picks have been through your event, and are any of the what alumni are coming back this year? Do you have any of the alumni that will be a part of the event this year?
Yeah, we're working on the college list. Actually, where our dates fell this year is a little bit challenging from the NFL aspect, because we're still going to be right when NFL OTAs are finishing up. So we're hoping to have a couple guys drop through on that standpoint. We'll have a good college list that we'll release in a little bit here as we finalize that stuff going in. And then obviously we're working on finalizing the high school list. But yeah, I think we're at, 15 of the last 16 quarterbacks that have won a Heisman have come through the event in some way, shape, or form. You know, and then the last couple of years, obviously a nice run with Caleb Williams last year, the Heisman winner, who was the Elite 11 MVP in 2021. And Bryce Young was Heisman the year before. And he was in the 2019 finals with him and CJ competing for the MVP and then competing to be the number one pick in the draft this year. So that was a really cool storyline to follow, just their relationship in general, and then how they've been so connected through the years, and in our event being a small part of that. So, you know, that's probably one of the funnest parts of this job, is being able to, you know, get off the road in the fall and follow the football season and see all these guys as they're going through their first, whether it's their first college start or, you know, leading their team to CFP appearances and things like that. And then obviously Heisman Trophy is the cherry on top of the sundae for all these guys that dream about playing college football growing up. Right.
Brian, one of the things I read about you is you have a photographic memory. Is that true?
It might be true. That's what my wife says.
does it help you in your role?
I think it helps from the standpoint of trying to keep names and, you know, whether it's stats or figures or things like that, you know, organized in some way, shape, or form. I think that's the, Sean, and you can speak to this too, as you go through this and you're in this space for many years, sometimes things can stack on top of each other, right? And you're trying to recall what classes kids were in or where they're from or things like that. So I think from that standpoint, when I think I have a decent recall when I see something on paper, I can have a pretty strong recall of it. But yeah, I think it's helpful. We see a lot of kids every year, and if you didn't have a great memory or recall, you'd have to end up watching a lot of tape or rewatching canvassing your notes and things like that, for sure.
Brian, it's been great to reconnect and have you on, and I just, all the memories, all the year we worked a lot together. You know, helping a lot of Nebraska kids, getting them in those Nike camps years ago when you were running those Nike camps, and we'd have Nebraska kids that I give you to get in those camps. And it was a lot of fun to kind of catch up, and looking forward to seeing the Elite 11. Is it going to be televised, or can people watch the event?
Yeah, we're working back on that. There will most likely be a post-produced show that'll air. That typically is in the fall. So they get time to edit and things like that. But we're hopeful that it's going to be, you know, one of the most robust programming features that we've had in the last couple of years, actually. So when we get that info finalized, we'll definitely do that. And then I think we'll also have some info on whether we're doing live streaming leading up to the event, or even just going on our Instagram live on the Elite 11 social accounts and things like that. But yeah, we'll do our best to publicize that in the days leading up to the finals event. So hopefully all the Husker fans can tune in and see how Daniel's doing out there.
Brian, they will tune in. So if you get it out there, the Husker fans will give you a bump. And there's obviously some Dylan Raiola curiosity with his connection to the program.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've heard of him. Yeah.
Will this be one of the first times that he's been on a stage with all the big guns in one room?
Yeah. I mean, I think for a lot of these guys, it's the first time that they come together. You know, there's various 7-on-7 tournaments or things like that, but for the most part, this is the first gathering. And then a couple of them might be in all-star games together right at the end of the year and things like that. But there aren't too many events where they all get to be in the same place. And especially for an extended period of time, they might bump into each other on college visits, rights, or things like that. But that's usually two or three of them or four of them. So this is, I think it's one of the, you know, especially if you ask the guys that have come through it, it's probably the coolest part about the event is that just them being able to sit down and start forming relationships. And a lot of these guys will play against each other, obviously, in college. But as they move through their football careers, they have more and more in common with each other and the experiences that they're sharing, whether they're battling for a starting job or thinking about going in the portal. You know, they really become great sounding boards for each other. So this is a great spot for them, to start forming them. Some of these relationships that'll be really important in their football life moving forward.
Well, Brian, thanks again. Have a great Memorial Day weekend and looking forward to following your event this year.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on, you guys.
All right. Thanks again to Brian Stumpf. What a cool job he has. I mean, when you just think about the history of
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
That event, and let's move on to headline number three as we kind of react to both Malachi Coleman, Brian Stumpf, our two mm-hmm. guests here on the show today. We brought it hot today, Sipple. We had two guests on Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah, I'll start with Malachi. Really interested in that answer he gave about what he saw when those first. He was at every practice this spring. As I said on the show, he didn't have class at Lincoln East till 10:40. So he was there for all 15 practices, which was, and he said he hates watching, hates it with a passion. But that was, I mean, Sean, you know how valuable that was for him to see exactly
mental reps.
Yeah. And see exactly what he's getting into.
Well, he's at a stadium right now.
Yeah. He was in, he was in
Garrett McGuire's office, I think.
That was fascinating. So, Sean, they report on Tuesday. I mean,
May 31st.
Yeah. And then it's on, you know. I mean, you know how it goes. You know how it goes in June. June is almost like official now. It's not technically, but they ramp it up fast. The way I always put it is guys can kind of make moves in June. If you're looking to move up at the depth chart,
you get 8 organized hours a week with your team in June. So 2 of those hours,
who's a coach does?
Yeah. They call it the Kara hours.
Uh-huh.
So you get 2 hours can be skills and drill per week.
Okay.
Two hours of film time per week. And then 4 hours of weight room time.
Okay.
Which, you know, that doesn't sound like a lot, but an hour in the weight room is a long time.
Yeah.
If you do the workout right.
Yeah.
So that in the conditioning and things. So they'll have 8 hours of time
with their guys.
And okay, 8 hours though, it's more than 8 hours.
As yeah, you know, let's face like it.
There's other times before and after that aren't official that the mm-hmm. players do, but there's 8 official hours a week they can do. And you're right. I mean, they're going to practice and do reps and the coaches can be involved
to a certain extent. Then they can do reps on their own
in the skills and drills. But yeah, it's, you know, it's a huge part for these newcomers to find out who's ready to go.
Yeah. Malachi, listen, he looks, I thought it was really interesting off the bat how he said, you know, there's a long time he didn't think he'd be a receiver, that he'd be a defender, maybe even at the line of scrimmage, you know, as a pass rusher. God, he looked
physical.
Yeah.
Like now, his upper body looked more developed than I had seen it.
Right. He looks, I'm interested in Malachi because I, you know, Sean, you know this stuff better than I do, but he's got to be a guy at in that conversation about who's the two freshmen who are going to play. Malachi's got to be almost at the top of that list, right? Who's going to play immediately? Who's going to make an impact?
So, well, and Lenhart.
And Prince. And Prince Will. But yeah, those are the guys. And I, you know, Malachi, a lot of it is mental. And how will he adjust to facing off against corners that are frankly older and better than him?
And let's face it, Rule wants to play some of these guys right away.
Yeah.
He's building this up. He wants to develop these guys to get them ready. 2023 is more about, you know, getting some of these guys ready for 24, 25, 26.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now here's the thing about Malachi too. I'm thinking out loud, but they don't have a ton of field stretchers at that, at the wide out position. He could be that. I mean, he runs like that and he's built
Betts
like that.
And Garcia Castaneda can run
for sure.
So they've got those guys.
Betts. I'll give you Betts more. But Washington
anyway, and Kemp are more possession like, and I would say Fleeks is kind of an unknown. I don't know what we're going to get.
More possession-like.
I don't know what they're going to get from
him. He was a running back for a part of his career.
Some of those walk-ons are going to probably play at receiver, though, too.
Right. I say that about Malachi because he's – Sean, what is he? Is he 6'4", 6'5", 6'6"?
6'3 and a half, 6'4", yeah.
Yeah. 197, 205 – you know, 197, 200, 205. That speed on the outside is really alluring. It's just – that's why I think those 15 practices are so important, because he's going to come in and know what to expect. I would think he'll make an impression early. I would think so.
All right, let's talk about Brian Stumpf,
yeah,
the Elite 11. And fascinating, isn't it? I mean, what he gets to do for a living, I mean, to run these events and camps, and 15 of the last 16 Heisman Trophy winner quarterbacks have gone through the Elite 11.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's so what I take away from the Stumpf interview is the prestige associated with that event and Daniel Kalen getting a shot to be in that. Now I like it for Daniel Kalen because Daniel Kalen loves being a quarterback. I mean, he does embrace that whole being a quarterback's a pretty wide. There's a lot of wide ranging responsibility, which I'm glad Stumpf touched on. It's, you got to embrace the sort of the prestige of that position and embrace what it means. And I get the feeling from talking to Mike Huffman, his coach at Bellevue West, that Daniel does understand that. And now here he is. He gets to go compete with the best quarterbacks in the country, the best high school quarterbacks in the country. Guys are heading to college. It's beautiful.
I'm intrigued. I mean, just to see him and Raiola throw together. And I mean, just to see Raiola on that stage and kind of, you know, the amount of pressure on some of these guys to win. I mean,
there you go.
If you're a five-star and don't win the thing and somebody else play, but it, then you can say, well, it's a camp, it's not a game,
Sean,
but it's still a competition.
Sean, that pressure goes with the position. I'm glad you said that because yeah, there is pressure, but there's pressure on that position pretty much every day, right? If you're the number one quarterback at a major college, there's sort of, I mean, not inordinate pressure on you every day, but there's some inordinate pressure on you on Saturdays. And every day, Sean, he said it. Brian Stumpf said it. He said, you remember the starting quarterback at your school. Do you remember the mayor at that time?
When you were a senior.
Right. I remember it was Ron Blank. I was our starting quarterback. Ron Blank.
I was going to say, I think our mayor.
Remember our mayor.
I want to say it was Mike Faye. No, Hal Dobb. It was Hal Dobb. I know that because I was the producer of his radio show.
Yeah, you know that. And I do remember our mayor too. Larry Merrick was his name. But
a little
different. Yeah, but I definitely. Easy now. Merrick was pretty powerful, Sean.
Columbus.
You do remember that. You know, you always remember who the quarterback was. And you know, even with Nebraska, when you think about a season, you usually think about the quarterback. Who's a quarterback that year? You know, so yeah, I'm glad they teach that to those kids.
Yeah, like you can almost name every starting quarterback at Nebraska. I would say if you know this program well, from Turner Gill on, an astute Husker fan. There's a couple in there.
Yeah,
that would get you, like Dave Sundberg.
Yeah, that was before Gill.
No, after.
Was it?
Yeah, he was the year after Gill.
Oh, God, Sean, I'm sorry.
And won the Sugar Bowl.
My bad.
Then Steve Taylor took over.
Okay.
Then it went to...
Don't do this to me.
Mickey Joseph.
Okay.
Jerry Godowski.
Yeah.
No, was it Jerry Godowski? Jerry Godowski, Mickey Joseph, Mike Grant, Tommy Frazier, Brooke Baringer, Scott Frost.
Okay. All right, stop right there.
Eric Crouch, Bobby Newcomb, Monte Cristo,
okay.
Jamal Lord.
Okay. Keep going.
Trying to think.
As long as you're going now.
Let's go Joe Daly.
Probably.
Let's go Zach Taylor.
Yeah, he got it.
Let's go Sam Keller. Let's go Joe Gans.
Yeah.
Good job. Let's go Zach Lee. Let's go Cody Green.
Yeah, you should be able to get it now.
I'm making my way down the trail here. We're at Cody Green.
Martinez.
We're at Tommy Armstrong.
Yeah.
And then after Tommy Armstrong, who replaced Tommy Armstrong?
Tanner Lee.
Tanner Lee for one season.
Yeah, Tanner Lee for one season.
And then Adrian.
And then Adrian Martinez. That's
and then
right.
Here we are.
Yep, here we are.
That was pretty freakish.
I think you got them all.
I'm sure somebody in the comments is going to nail it, but I think I got through. I think who was the quarterback before Turner Gill when they were
– Don't know.
When they were kind of keeping the seat warm for Gill to win the job.
I wish I could say.
Then he took over in the Auburn game.
Yeah, there's some people shouting right now that, Sipple, how do you not know that? I can't.
I mean, it was 40 years ago.
Right. I can't say it off the top of my head. I mean, that's history. That who did he go in for? Who did he take the place of? I just can't say it off the top of my head. Maybe I'll think of it and we'll get back.
Our comments will blow up after the show. All right. Let's go. Headline number four. Some big news.
Oh, yes.
Out of the East, our neighbors to the East in Iowa City, Iowa Athletic Director Gary Barta announced his retirement effective immediately.
Effective August 1.
Which is essentially immediately.
Yeah, yeah. August 1. He took over in 2006.
It's very fascinating
yeah.
with everything that's gone on there, with off-the-field things, the situation with Kirk and Brian Ferentz, the strength coach issues they dealt with. There's just a number of things there. A lot of politicians were getting involved. With some of the other issues going on there, but Gary Barta announced his retirement August 1.
Yeah. Now Barta, Gary, is 59 years old.
That's young.
Right. I mean, now think about that. Just that number makes you pause. Like, wait a second. He announces retirement at age 59.
59 now is like 49.
Right.
10 years, 20 years ago.
What you referred to, Sean, politicians, Barta and his athletics department during his time, this is recent years, have settled lawsuits related to gender discrimination, racial discrimination, and Title IX for $11 million over the past 6 years. Now, I'm not, you know, I don't know, I'm not privy to the inside workings of the Iowa Athletic Department, but $11 million in settlements
that's
in the
money.
Last 6 years, that has to factor into any discussion. Now he did great things too. He was the AD there when they won 4 NCAA wrestling championships. Okay. Their GPA exceeded 3.0 8 years in a row, and they had an 89% graduation rate. But yeah, he was in charge during the time when there were major, they're not brush fires. Those were forest fires in Iowa. So I don't know. I wonder how that factors into it. And then everybody's going to wonder, how does this affect Kirk Ferentz? These were, Barta and Kirk Ferentz are the nation's longest serving AD head football coach duo at one school. Now,
and before, I mean, you had Bob Stoops and Castiglione. They were kind of the same era, the same year, pretty much right around the same time.
Yeah.
And then Stoops retired.
Right. That's right, Sean. So how does this affect Kirk Ferentz? It affects him. It does. Exactly how, I don't know. Is Barta setting the stage? Is this news set the stage for maybe Kirk Ferentz having one last year? Now, he has signed, Sean, for several years. Kirk Ferentz. I think he signed till 2029. Yeah, that, and I apologize. I didn't look that up, but he's got extended for several.
Well, that's
years.
Fairly. Every college football coach carries 4 to 5+ carryover years on their contract. Mm-hmm. That's just the way the business is now.
True.
So it's not like you never say, oh, he only has 1 or 2. You don't ever let a coach's contract get that deep because of recruiting. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the issue with his son. But God, I think Iowa's going to be pretty good this year.
Well, if you ask me right now, and I don't know what those magazines say, you got them in front of you, to pick who's going to win the West. Now, it's wide open. Most people are picking Wisconsin.
See, I'd pick Iowa.
I would pick Iowa. I would pick Iowa, too. They added Cade McNamara. They added from Michigan, Eric All. They tied in from Michigan. They added help up front. I like them. And McNamara, let's face it, McNamara is the main reason. The second reason, though, is I love it when a coach's back is against the wall like Brian Ferentz. I think that – I don't like it for him. It's a lot of pressure on that guy. But for a team, that can be really good. When a coach is back against the wall, I can
imagine how laser focused Brian Ferentz probably is, right? Knowing that
100, Sean,
everybody in Sipple's new thing is 100%. Always says that all the time. But,
100.
I mean, everybody is, I mean, you've got the tar and feather and the pitchforks out. Everyone's going after you. And, you know, he got played for Iowa. I mean, he loves Iowa and he's become public enemy number one.
Seems like it.
Because of they've had some inept quarterback play. Well, they've got a good quarterback now.
Yeah, Sean, they have. But we've said this, we've talked about this before, but it was up front where they really struggled. Their offensive line it did not resemble anything like they're used to at Iowa last year.
Well, and let's remember, they finally got a tough schedule last year. They had to play Ohio State and Michigan last year. Mm-hmm. And Pitt, did they play Penn State last year too?
I don't think so.
But they played Ohio. I want to say they had a tough schedule last year. I mean, they actually had the legit crossovers that, you know, they always have the schedule where you're like, they never get like three tough crossover games.
Yeah. I should know. I think they might have played Penn State now that you mentioned it, Sean.
Yeah.
No, they definitely played Michigan. I watched that game. Anyway, Iowa, Sean, was not Iowa up front. And now we'll see what they look like this year. They didn't run the Iowa offense. That's what, if you go back and watch the game against Nebraska, it was like you're watching another program. They weren't running what.
So this is why I think they're going to win the West. This is their crossovers. They got at Penn State, Iowa. That's a tough game. But their other crossovers are home against Rutgers, and then they have a home game against Michigan State. So they should go 2-1 in the crossovers.
No, they should.
You know, everyone is so, I mean, they went 8-5 last year. It's not like they had a crummy year. The Nebraska loss really took some steam out of their deal. They beat Kentucky 21-0 in the bowl game.
Yeah, it did. That helped.
But they have Utah State, Iowa State, Western Michigan in the non-conference. Mm-hmm. Then at Penn State, September 23rd. So, you know, their schedule is manageable. Minnesota is a home game for them. They're at Nebraska, though, and they're at Wisconsin.
Still, I mean, you're gonna have some tough games in the Big Ten always, but yeah, that is definitely a manageable crossover schedule. Michigan State lost Sean; they lost their starting quarterback, a starting receiver, and a starting corner. People are wondering what's going on. Rutgers is down; they weren't that good anyway. But they're gonna go. They're taking a step back.
Yeah, their quarterback play has dropped off. I mean, that's a game Iowa's gonna be favored by 2 touchdowns.
Anyway, Gary Barta, age 59, reports surfaced this morning. He announces his retirement effective August 1. That's an AD who took over in 2006. When I guess he's about 42 years old. He's a young AD.
He's young.
Yeah.
Well, Tom Cakert on our Husker Online breakdown today for Iowa, our post-spring review with Tom Cakert of HawkeyeReport.com. He says, you look at that schedule, and it's hard to argue him. He thinks Iowa can be a 10-2, 9-3 team.
Holy crap.
Well, they have Penn State. Dog, and then Wisconsin, Nebraska, Iowa State. I mean, they have games that are
they're like a lot of teams, Sean. They're like a lot of teams.
They could be 8-4 to 10-2. I think Iowa at minimum is 8-4.
Or 7-5. I might say 7-5. Now, here's the thing. It's just all about close games. They're going to have to win some close games to get where they want. You could say that about almost any team in the Big Ten right now. Like Nebraska. How's Nebraska going to finish? Well, how do they do in the close games? Because they're going to play in 7 or 8 really.
Well, and people don't want to hear this, but like Nebraska had the lead on Michigan in the fourth quarter. They had the lead on Ohio State when Scott Frost was the coach. They were playing with some of these teams, but they didn't finish. They made the mistakes down the stretch.
Well, what does Trev emphasize? What's Matt Rhule emphasize? Details, 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 details. Sean, what I've learned is a lot goes into the conversation of how do you win close games? There's a lot. That's a complicated conversation, but details are a big part of it. And quarterback play, frankly, is a big part of it. But there's a lot of coaching in that too. It's a broad-based discussion, but I think a lot of the reason, part of the reason Trev was attracted to a coach like Matt Rhule is because Rhule emphasizes details. Now, you could say, come on, Sip. Every coach emphasizes details. I don't know. I've been around here. Some are much better at it than others, right? I covered Osborne, and Osborne was a master with the details. I covered some other coaches. I would not say we're masters with them.
Osborne was always one step ahead. I mean, just the way, you know, he like the Orange Bowl against Miami. Miami had more talent than they did. Mm-hmm. Ray Lewis, Warren Sapp. Mm-hmm. But he knew their defense overplayed and slanted hard.
Yeah.
Because they wanted to make the big play. So what did he do? Called those fullback traps to Corey Schlesinger. Mm-hmm. Won him a national championship calling two fullback trap plays.
Yeah, you're right, Sean. That's a good
example. He just recognized those things. I want one more thing here in Iowa because this just came out. State Senator Rob Sand, excuse me, State Auditor Rob Sand responds to the firing of Gary Barta, retirement. Said Gary Barta's departure is a long time coming. The four different lawsuits for discrimination that cost Iowa more than $11 million. Discrimination demands accountability. The University of Iowa should publicly release all terms of his departure.
There you go.
So it's this thing is far from over.
Yeah. I told you. It's 59. You're right. Those reporters in Iowa have a, you know what? I don't know if they're going to have much of a break this weekend. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying?
One, I'm sure Kirk Ferentz does. He has his own PR firm.
Yes, he does.
So you wonder what the PR firm's cooking up.
They've rallied. The troops have rallied. They have rallied.
All right, let's close it up. Headline number five. We're just going to call this Husker News and Notes. You saw me flipping through the magazines. Simple. Yes. It's my favorite time. Memorial Day weekend. College football magazines.
You went to Barnes & Noble.
I went to Barnes & Nobles before the show. Got a Lindy's. Got an Athlon. Luke Reimer on the cover. And Anthony Grant.
Hey, I called that. So Anthony Grant.
We got a split Athlon cover. Who'd they go with here? The tight end from Minnesota, Brevin Spann.
Yeah. Ford.
Cooper DeJean, corner from Iowa, and Braylon Allen. So that's your split Big Ten cover. And then you had the Nebraska cover here with Luke Reimer on Lindy. So
okay.
And the consensus in both of these, kind of what we thought, mm-hmm. both have Nebraska pick fifth in the West.
Okay.
And about going 6-6.
Yeah. But what
plain chalk.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's worth noting that it's a wide open West. I mean, it's pretty much wide open.
Iowa's got the schedule. Mm-hmm. Nebraska's got a schedule.
Yeah.
So I don't, you know, I think Wisconsin doesn't have the luxury of a schedule. No. That's why I have a hard
tough schedule.
If Iowa wins the head to head against Wisconsin, they're going to win the West because of the crossover advantage they have. Mm-hmm. If you go 2-1 or 3-0 in your crossovers, you're going to have a really good chance to win the division.
Yeah, that's true. So Nebraska, be back to Nebraska again. I just will emphasize it till the end of time right now. And the way the Big Ten is, the way college football is in general, they got to figure out how to, okay, Sean, let's put it this way. Win close games, Minnesota. If Nebraska beats Minnesota, you think they're going to go up there and win by 21?
No.
Do you even think they'll beat Colorado by 21? I don't think so. I think you got to go win a close game.
They'd have Colorado. To force a bunch of turnovers.
Yeah, if you beat Michigan, it's not going to be by much. If you win at Illinois, and it is not going to be by much. Now, you might put it to Northwestern. It's not like Nebraska does all the time. Purdue, maybe you could win that game by 10. At Michigan State, close. Maryland's close. At Wisconsin, close. Iowa, close. Sean, it's going to come down to that.
So look, this is what Lindy's wrote. Tom Deanhart wrote this for Nebraska. New coach, new hope. This time it's Matt Rule's turn for the good news. The bad news, trench play has not been up to snuff for years. Our call, Huskers keep cycling through coaches in search of their first bowl appearance since 2016.
Okay. Okay.
That was kind of his cliff notes.
Okay.
But as far as the all Big Ten teams go, you know, there's the three offensive teams right here.
Okay.
There's not a Nebraska guy listed first, second, or third team offense right now.
Really?
And on defense, Quentin Newsom is second team. Looking through here right now, Luke Reimer is third team. Brian Buscini is third team. Ty Robinson is third team. So you've got one second team defender, cornerback Quentin Newsom, and then a trio of third teamers right now. Ty Robinson, Luke Reimer, Brian Buscini. But you know, Anthony Grant not listed on here.
Nobody from the offenses on the first, second, or third teams?
Not on the Lindy's.
Okay, I'm going to tell you something, Sean. Well, I don't need to do this. I do this all the time. You're fighting an uphill battle if you don't have all-conference players. How many first-team all-conference players does Michigan have? Offense.
Okay, here's Michigan's first-teamers.
First-teamers.
Quarterback, J.J. McCarthy. Running back, Blake Corum. Michigan, offensive lineman, Zach Zinter, senior. Senior offensive lineman, Trevor Keegan. So they have four first-teamers on offense.
Uh-huh.
Then on defense, D lineman Chris Jenkins, and then defensive back Will Johnson. So
six first teamers versus zero for Nebraska. I mean, if you're going to get back to winning a conference, that's what you got to have. It's informative. I mean, we can't. I know I repeat it all the time, but I just don't think you can repeat it enough. In part because I think people forgot here. It's been so long that people have forgotten how much the talent discussion has dropped off. We don't even have Sean. That's all conference. We need all Nebraska needs all American.
Well, and I will say though,
Nebraska needs all American.
If you're first team all Big Ten, you're pretty much an all American, first or second team.
Maybe.
I mean, based on the draft data.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, look at these.
I'd have to look at that, but yeah, you have a pretty good shot. You're going to be in contention for sure.
But yeah, look at these running backs: Braylon Allen, Blake Corum, Travion Henderson, Nick Singleton, Donovan Edwards, Caleb Johnson from Iowa. Those are your six running backs.
It's nice to have a gritty football team, Sean, a tough little gritty team. But that'll get you eight wins if you're really hitting it hot. If you're hitting on all cylinders. Now, if you have six first team All Big Ten players and you're hitting on all cylinders, now you're in the college football playoff, right? That's the difference. Having no first team all conference players, having no second team all conference players, you're a nice little gritty team. But that's not what Nebraska is looking for. That's not what anybody's looking for. That's not what Rule's looking for. That's not I'm gonna tell you, that's not what Trev Albers is looking for. So good for Newsom to be on that second team, but you need more guys.
This is the recruiting rankings. I was trying to find the actual team rankings here. Let's see. Georgia number one, Michigan number two, Ohio State number three, Alabama number four. So Lindy's is calling for basically the same four teams in the playoff again. Now, Alabama wasn't in the playoff last year.
Right.
But, you know, Georgia, Michigan, Ohio State was. LSU, they're calling as a playoff team. Florida State, six.
Okay.
Washington, seven.
Okay. Yeah.
Penn State, eight.
Got to put Penn State in there.
Texas, nine.
Wow.
That's high.
Sark's never won more than nine.
USC, 10. Clemson, 11. Notre Dame, 12. Tennessee, 13. K-State, 14. So they could make Utah's 15, TCU 16, Oregon State 17, Oregon 18, Wisconsin 19. So 20. You got Wisconsin as the only Big Ten West. Iowa's 22, excuse me. So it's really Iowa, Wisconsin, your two ranked teams in this poll. Ole Miss 20, Oklahoma 21, Iowa 22, UTSA 23. That's going to be a sexy pick to get that one New Year's Six, you know, non-power five bid. South Carolina, then Tulane is 25.
Okay.
So, all right, let's close it out in this final fifth headline as we continue. Let's talk some recruiting.
Oh yes.
News and notes. Staff is off the road. They're done. They used their 168 days over the spring, which equates to about 17 days per assistant coach. They maximized it. EJ Barthol was back at Modern Day High School again yesterday to check in on Brandon Baker, Nate Frazier. But I think now the focus is that first weekend of June.
Yes.
Nebraska, we have eight official visitors coming in already. Mm-hmm. I've heard it's actually as many as nine, but that will be kind of the first big weekend here for Nebraska, the June 2nd weekend. June 16th, they've got three coming in, but then on June 23rd, we've already got 14 official visitors on that list. So Nebraska is going to use roughly half of their allotted official visits over the month of June.
And then look at that first weekend, five guys from Texas in that first weekend. That's one thing to look at. Five guys from the state of Texas. Also, you have the quarterback in here, Kamari McClellan. from
Penn. I don't know if he's coming. We'll find. I mean, he's
listed.
Yeah, he's in. Well, because we haven't been able to get it confirmed that he's not coming.
Okay.
And the Daniel Kalen thing might have changed that. He was never an official.
Okay. I'm sorry, Sean.
He was paying his own way. Yeah, we still have him listed only because it hasn't been confirmed he's not
coming. Okay. Also, in-state player, right? Caleb Pye from a three-star offensive lineman from Omaha Central, whose dad played basketball at Creighton.
LaVon Pye from, yep.
Yeah. But that it catches my eye. That
big defensive back weekend. Look how many DBs are coming in.
Yep.
It kind of puts into perspective who their top defensive backs are, because I think a lot of those targets are coming in this weekend.
Yeah, led by those top two, Peyton Morgan, a four-star player from Pflugerville, Texas, and Mario Buford, four-star player from DeSoto.
And, you know, all the DBs that you look at for them, they can all run, and they all have bodies that are developed or can be developed further. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that's a key trend. To play DB for Evan Cooper, you better be able to run.
Play DB for about anybody, especially at this level of football. But yeah, so there you go, Sean. It's on. I mean, it's going to be an interesting June at the stadium.
And those camps will start up
when?
I believe Sunday. So June 4th is the first one.
Because coaches are working now.
Yeah. And so when the recruit, here's how it's going to work, the recruits will leave Sunday morning. They're going to run a camp Sunday afternoon.
Oh, boy.
And then they're going to run a camp, I want to say not Monday, because then Matt Rhule, then they're going to go do satellite camps on Monday, Tuesday. And okay. they're going to come back to Lincoln and do more camps.
Okay.
So it's going to be a busy opening week of June for Nebraska, as the coaches will get the weekend off, catch their breath, but they're back at it.
Okay.
All right. And go, hey, Simple, don't steal my magazines.
Yeah, I think I'm just going to go buy one. I'm going to buy that Lindy's. I might steal your Athlon.
A year ago, when we technically weren't working together, mm-hmm. You took my magazine. You marked them all up with all your scribbles and notes. So don't steal the magazines this year.
Did
right?
I do that? Are you sure it was me?
Oh, yeah. It became like your little cookbook. I mean, you were writing recipes in there and everything. But have a good Memorial Day weekend, Sid.
Yeah, you too. This was fun, Sean.
All right. Well, I hope everybody has a great weekend. Make sure you like, follow, subscribe to us here at HuskerOnline.com. We got a great special as well. $29.99, 6 months of access to Husker Online. Hope everybody has a great, happy Memorial Day weekend. Thanks for joining us on Husker Online Headlines.